the gangsters, none of whom had bothered strapping in. Their shocked faces and the weapons spinning out of their long-fingered hands. A cup of something blue hurtling upward, splashing its contents in a perfect arc across the space amid everyone. Griso's slumped body and a splotch of blood spreading slowly across his white medical gown. And then, another explosion ripped one of the side doors halfway off, letting a shock of pale sunlight in as the transport tumbled upside down again and finally came skidding to a rest. One of the gangsters gasped, blood dripping from his open mouth. One of his eyes was missing, and half his face had become a singed mess of raw flesh. Fison looked around. The other two gangsters were dead, their shattered bodies lying amid the wreckage at the far end of the transport. Griso, still strapped in, lay nearly lifeless, but his shoulders heaved one time with another breath. The medical droid, also secured to the opposite side of the craft, took a quick scan of the carnage, and then regarded Fison with its softly glowing eyes.
"I suggest we evacuate quickly,"
it said. Severed wires sparkled from the severed stump where one of its arms had been just moments before.
"Or we will soon die."
"Griso," Fison said, his head still spinning, body an entire ocean of aches.
"Your friend is all but expired. It is very unlikely we will be able to save him and ourselves. Strategically, we must evacuate immediately if we hope to survive."
"We're taking him with us," Fison said, finally managing to unfasten his shoulder straps.
"There are life forms approaching. The ambushers, most likely."
The one gangster still living gurgled. Fison reached gingerly past the man's dilapidated face and pulled a small blaster from his underarm holster. A shadow fell across the patch of light streaming in from the wrecked door. Fison turned and shot, staring past his trembling hand as the Utai raider flew backward, a charred hole smoking right between his eyes. He'd killed someone. Fison Gore had just taken a life. Sure, it was an attacker, someone who was about to kill him. But still, he had sworn an oath. He was a medical professional, or almost anyway. He wasn't supposed to... Another face appeared in the doorway, this time accompanied by a blaster bolt that singed past Fison and slammed into the dying gangster. Fison let loose a barrage of shots, not even realizing he was screaming until the roar of his blaster died down. He didn't know how much time had passed when he finally stepped out of the overturned transport. Griso slung over one shoulder, the medical droid, now with a charred stump instead of one of his arms, at his side. Seven Utai bodies lay amid the wreckage.
"One of these raiders is still alive, but barely."
Even though it was right there, its voice sounded very far away. Fison nodded slightly, gazing out past the clearing smoke.
"Which way, Master?"
"Master." Somehow, in the midst of all that killing, he had become the droid's master. Or maybe it was just because there was no one else left around. He didn't answer. The fallen Utai had become the whole world.
"Up that embankment is the road. We could find it and follow it back to Bao City. Back home."
Fison shook his head. "We're never going home again."
"This direction, past that stream, there are caves. Beyond that, an abandoned sinkhole."
Fison looked up from the bodies, found the droid staring at him, awaiting direction. "Lead the way, and bring that dying Utai. Parts of him may prove useful to us."
Part 2.
Lando.
The Millennium Falcon, about 15 years ago.
At some point,
Lando Calrissian said as the Falcon swooped out of hyperspace,
you're going to have to tell me what this is all about. You know that, right?
L3 turned her single eye on him and just stared for a couple of seconds. That was a no in L3Es, generally, but this time Lando thought he detected a hint of something else. Curiosity, maybe? Pity? He shook his head.
You're lucky I like you, L. Now where... Whoa!
A vast sea of asteroids stretched out ahead of them, but they appeared to be formed from pure ice. Their slowly spinning edges glinted with the light of a distant star. The field seemed to go on forever.
What is this place? Some kind of ice asteroid system?
It's the Missoulan Remnants Belt,
L3 said.
Enter it.
As in Missoula the Ice Moon? Didn't it rupture ages ago? Oh.
Hence, remnants.
Got it. And enter the ice asteroid field? That's what you're asking me to do?
Affirmative.
Just enter it. Drive the Falcon right up into the middle of the shattered ice moon.
Correct. That is what I'm asking you to do, Captain Calrissian.
After a moment, and very quietly, L3 said,
please.
L3 never said please. Lando cast a dubious glance at the slowly spinning frozen shapes in the darkness ahead.
This is a terrible idea,
he said, easing the Falcon forward past the first line of humongous moon shards. They loomed like sleeping giants on either side of the ship.
If I guess what we're doing out here, will you tell me I'm right?
He said, into the eerie silence of deep space.
Probably not, but you are welcome to try.
Is this about love, El? Did you finally discover how droids can love, and now you've got me chasing some handsome droid boy out into the far reaches of the galaxy?
I'm curious why you presume the droid I am interested in would be a boy.
Lando slammed the steering panel in triumph.
Okay, wow. So I was right. What's her name, then? Is she cute? Can't be as good-looking as me, right?
L3 just stared out into the emptiness.
Speaking of love, Lando went on chipperly, I want you to know just how close I was to finally making something happen with the Vice Grand Administrator when you decided to...
My analytics of the situation determined that particular entanglement had exactly zero to do with the concept that you humans call love.
Oh? And what does a droid know about love, L?
Again, no comment.
Okay. Seriously,
Lando said, swerving the Falcon around a smaller ice shard that had been hidden behind a gigantic one they'd slipped past.
You set up a delivery of spice for us to smuggle, and it's going to make me the richest man in the galaxy. L, you shouldn't have.
Lando.
Well, okay, yes, you should have, but still, wow!
Lando.
And anyway, what in...
Lando!
L3 reached across the flight deck and shoved the boosters to a lower setting.
There.
She nodded toward a dark, rectangular cube in the distance.
What is that?
Lando couldn't quite make it out, but it appeared to be some kind of a rusty metal chamber floating through the shattered moonfield. The Falcon sensor screen let out a blurp of alarm as four lights blinked to life on it.
Of course we have company. It looks like it's Imperials.
The blips closed fast toward the floating chamber, and pretty soon, Lando spotted three TIE fighters and an Imperial shuttle gliding through the Missoulan remnants.
This just gets better and better, he muttered. Anything else you'd like to not tell me until it's too late?
L3 was staring out at the floating chamber. The Imperial squad surrounded it quickly, and for a moment, it seemed like the whole ice field held its breath. Then something stirred at the top of the chamber. Lando squinted.
Is that a...
Two blasts roared out, tearing through one of the ties, which reeled into a wild loop and... and then smashed into a moon shard, exploding. The other ships lurched back into a defensive formation, evading another barrage of laser cannon fire and returning it in kind.
Laser cannon? Yes, it is.
Another TIE got clipped, but it wasn't out of commission, and with no evasive maneuvers at its disposal, the floating chamber was taking a beating. It wouldn't last much longer, Lando surmised. Should we...
Wait. Just wait.
Something else stirred at the chamber's rooftop now. An escape pod, maybe. But instead, a figure in a dark green spacesuit emerged, heavy laser fire blazing from each hand.
Whoa!
Lando gaped. With a shriek of flame, the figure blasted off through the Masulan remnants. The Imperial ships seemed to be simply startled into paralysis for a moment, or perhaps they were conferring. Then the shuttle took off, followed by one of the TIEs, leaving the other hovering by the chamber.
I don't suppose you just wanted to witness a wild space battle between some Imperials and a lunatic in a spacesuit,
Lando said.
And now we could just jump on out of here. Mission accomplished, huh?
L3 didn't take her eye off the chamber.
Have you met me?
Unfortunately,
Lando sighed, maneuvering the Falcon from its hiding place and jetting toward the lone TIE fighter.
Kashyyyk system. Now.
Freema! Freema! Bara! Bara! Freema! Freema!
Is that really necessary?
Han yelled over the blaring music as he settled into the co-pilot's seat.
Freema Lima! Chaka Chaka Freema Bola Freema!
What?
Taka yelled.
Is that really... You know what?
Han scanned the controls for an off switch.
Oh, you're looking for this?
Taka held up a remote device of some kind and grinned, then clicked a button, and the heavy, grinding, screaming sound suddenly stopped.
Thank you,
Han sighed.
How do you fly with that noise blaring in your ears?
Taka shrugged.
Keeps me focused. Wait, are you trying to tell me you've never heard of Snograth and the Mogwars?
No, I have not. And I'd hoped to keep it that way.
Catch your life!
Taka yelled, clicking the cacophony back on and rocking back and forth.
Freema! Freema!
Taka!
Han shook his head and huffed off down the narrow hallway into the main hold of the Vermilion.
I don't know about this pilot,
he told Lando, who was leaning over a table covered in small cards and metal figurines, brow furrowed with concentration. Across from him, Kasha sat with her arms behind her head, eyes closed, a slight smile on her face.
I'm sure they're fine, Han,
Lando said without taking his eyes off the board.
You're just mad you're not in the pilot's seat for once in your life.
There's some kind of horrible noise blasting in there. While flying, Lando. Taka insisted on playing it for me. Flomath and the Mog something.
Han sat on the bench beside Kasha and rubbed a hand through his hair.
They're trying to share things with you, Han,
Kasha said, her eyes still closed.
It's called bonding. Lando... I'm still waiting.
Lando growled.
I know.
What are you guys playing?
Psygok,
Kasha said.
It's like the Jarak. Same madman invented them both, in fact. But Psygok is way more cool.
Makes the Jarak look like canvy blocks,
Lando said, scowling. Kasha wiggled her eyebrows.
We have to master it as part of tactical training on Ryloth. Lando sucks at it.
C4 to 18 Alpha,
Lando said. Kasha allowed the move to hang in there for a moment, still smiling blissfully.
Blocked.
Griff.
Something short and lumpy rolled out of the cargo hold, and Han leapt up, blaster out. Kasha opened her eyes, and then rolled them.
You're gonna have to get used to there being a wart on board, Han. So jumpy.
Korg slapped his long, shiny arms onto the floor and hopped sloppily forward on two stubby legs. His bulgy yellow eyes took in the room with a musty, innocent, and sleepy wonder. Like he was vaguely amused and somehow couldn't be bothered at the same time.
"Is there a point to him?"
Hans said, holstering his blaster and eyeing the creature uneasily.
"Does he serve a purpose besides sliming up the equipment and generally being a nuisance?"
"Pest control," Lando said. "And besides, look at that face."
Korg turned his bemused gaze on Lando and blinked, possibly smiling. Then he burped, and with a slobbery flash, his tongue blasted out and back again, snatching up a packet of dry-packed meat strips from the table and disappearing it into his huge mouth. Han gaped.
"Wrapper and all? How does he..."
"Just..." Kasha held up a hand. "Wait for it."
The wart rocked back and forth on his hind legs, stubby toes tapping the floor. Then he blinked quickly and let out another burp, sending the tattered, soaked shreds of the wrapper fluttering into the air.
"That's it,"
Hans said, heading for the cockpit.
"I've had it."
"Easy,"
Lando cautioned, standing.
"And just take a nap or something. We're already coming up on Kashyyyk. We're not switching pilots now."
Han turned, let out a long breath.
"All right, Lando. This is your mission. We'll do what you want. But if that..."
He pointed at Korg.
"Eats any more of my snacks, airlock."
"So touchy,"
Lando muttered, sitting and turning his attention back to the Psygok spread.
99-39 Vector.
"Blocked,"
Lando growled. Florks announced dejectedly from the door to the tech room. Lando looked up.
"That's it?"
Florks shook his head and placed the three Vazavir Ficas they'd nicked from Poppy Dilu on the counter.
"Stray cats!"
"What's his problem?"
Kasha asked.
"I had him run a microfiber and organic compound analysis on those little divination pieces, and he didn't come up with much."
"Well?"
Han came over and sat by the Ugnaught.
"What did you get?"
Florks explained somberly. Then he shrugged.
"Well, there's soil traces from the Taraba sector," Lando translated.
"Figured that much when the Toydarian mentioned a land of plains and gorges,"
Han said.
"Isn't Utapau in Taraba?"
Lando nodded.
"Fazan Gore's home planet, and same. But he also said there's dirt from the Kalia sector."
Kasha raised an eyebrow.
"Kalia? That's Outer Rim."
"Mm-hmm," Lando said. "Not much there but a couple of gas-ball planets and mostly empty moons."
"Good place to hide out, though,"
Han said.
"No?"
"We're coming out of hyperspace,"
Taka's voice said over the comm.
"Please fasten your restraining belts and make sure you've retrieved all your personal items. Local time is..."
A series of Wookiee-like growls and roars sounded, followed by Taka chuckling. Han shook his head. Night was falling on the giant, twisty Rorschach trees of the Black Forest as Taka brought the Vermilion down onto the rickety landing bay the Wookiees had set up just outside their fortress village. Torches speckled the darkness up ahead, and mountains rose against the darkening sky. A team of fully armed Wookiees stood waiting for them, and they didn't look pleased.
"That's odd,"
Han said.
"They're usually a little happier to see me."
"You told them we were coming," Lando said. "Right?"
"Of course. Sent the transmission yesterday. Chewie messaged back to come, and that he needed to talk to me anyway."
"Angry Wookiees, and your buddy said he wants to talk,"
Taka said.
Sounds ominous. You guys got this. I'ma take a nap in the cargo hold hammock. If you need me, tell the Ugnaught.
Real hero, Han muttered, throwing his jacket on and ducking out of the cockpit.
Hey, Taka called. You hired a pilot, not an appetizer plate for Wookiees. And anyway, you'll be glad I'm alive and well-rested when you need to make fast tracks out of here.
You may have a point there, Lando conceded, following Han out into the main hold of the ship.
This looks a little dicey, Han said to Peekpa. Florks was already snoring away contentedly in the cargo hold hammock, but probably not for long. So Lando and I are going to go out there alone and see what's going on.
Peekpa!
Peekpa squealed. Han frowned.
Does anyone speak Ewok?
Lando just shrugged.
Great, Han said. This is going to be a long trip.
Han and Lando walked down the gangplank into the muggy Kashyyyk twilight. Scatterbugs and sree flies flitted through the purple-streaked sky and danced in and out of the torches lighting the somber Wookiee procession. Han couldn't make out their faces clearly enough to see if Chewie was with them. He waved, fumbled through a greeting in his stumbling, accented Shriwook, and then stood there awkwardly as a huge gray-haired male stepped forward and roared a welcome.
Sounds like there's been some trouble, Han translated.
They apologize for the chilly greeting. They've had to stay on high alert at all times.
So I see, Lando whispered.
The towering warriors kept glancing out into the darkening woods around them. Far off in the trees, something howled. Han shuddered, thanked the Wookiee for the explanation, and asked where Chewie was.
Come, the Wookiee roared, beckoning with a shaggy arm.
Han recognized the same body language his best friend would use when he was doing his best not to seem threatening to a being he could easily destroy.
We will take you to him.
Here we go, Han said. Look alive.
A dangling rope bridge led away from the landing pad into the torchlit treetop village. Han hadn't been here since he'd helped fight off an Imperial occupation just before the Battle of Jakku. 2 years ago. The place had smelled of endless destruction and rotting corpses. Half the forest had been leveled. A once safe haven turned into a dizzying industrial nightmare, powered by the slave labor of its own people. Now the forest seemed to have made an impressive comeback. Off in the distance, Han glimpsed a fallen AT-ACT walker covered in fern and flowers, with plant stalks and small trees sprouting from its blown-open metal belly. The Wookiee up front yelped something and raised his hand. They'd come to a circular, dangling catwalk with a bonfire in the center. Several tall figures stood on the other side of the fire, but Han couldn't make out their faces. A high-pitched scream came from behind them. 8 high-powered bowcasters turned back toward the rope bridge, where Han could make out a short figure barreling toward them.
Peekpa? Han sighed.
The Ewok is gonna get us blown the hell up,
Lando grunted under his breath. The Wookiees blinked down at the tiny furry form bustling past them. A few curious growls rose, but no one seemed too sure what to do. Then someone stepped out from the other side of the fire pit, his face lit up by the dancing flames.
Chewie,
Han said, relief flooding through him.
Chufandola Machigo!
Peekpa screeched, dive-bombing the Wookiee's knees, and then wrapping her little arms around them and nuzzling her face against his fur.
We brought an old friend, I guess,
Han said, gritting his teeth.
Sorry.
Chewie cocked his head at the Ewok and made a noise.
I don't know her either,
Han said.
I figured you would, the way she's been going on about you. At least I think she has. Can't be too sure.
Chewie shrugged, then reached down and took her little paw in his huge, furry hand. He growled, and led them deeper into the compound, hand in hand with Pikpa. More and more armed guards lined the hanging bridges as they moved deeper into the forest. Night had fallen completely around them now. Glimpses of an orange moon peeked out between the fluttering rocher leaves overhead. Chewie roared, guiding Han and Lando to seats in front of another bonfire. A hunched-over, silver-haired Wookiee nodded at them as they sat. The Elder greeted them with a raspy growl.
Her name is Karashki,
Han translated.
And she welcomes us.
In a near whisper, Karashki again apologized for the formalities and cold welcome, especially considering the pivotal role Han had played in the liberation of Kashyyyk. There had been disappearances, she explained. Young Wookiees gone missing from nearby cities and villages. Only a few at the moment, but enough to have everyone spooked. Pieces of them were discovered, often set up in what appeared to be some kind of ritualistic way. But only pieces. Families of the disappeared spoke of a figure lurking in the woods at dusk in the days before their loved ones vanished. The Long Man, they called him. He had elements about him that spoke of being a droid. But he was too stealthy to be a machine, the experts thought. And they'd picked up a scent, though it was none that any of them could identify. Then, 2 weeks ago, the disappearances ceased. Still, the communities had remained on high alert. Han and Lando traded a worried look.
It's possible, Han said, that we are on the trail of the same creature that's been stealing your children.
Karashki nodded. This was her guess as well, she rasped, based on what she'd heard about what they were facing. It was suspected that this Long Man had left and taken several pieces of the young Wookiees he'd snatched with him. They were dead, this was known, but their souls would not rest as long as parts of them were being carried all over the galaxy for who knew what nefarious purpose. Proper funeral rites were necessary, and so whatever parts of them could be found had to be retrieved. They would send Chewbacca on this mission. He would help Han and Lando track down this Long Man, and he would collect what parts of his murdered fellow Wookiees he could find, even though in truth he should be staying home with his family after all the time he'd had to spend away from them. Pikpa put her head on Chewie's knee and squeezed. Chewie roared, nodding. He had already bid his family goodbye and packed his bags. The elder Wookiee commanded after Han thanked her. Rid us of this menace.
Han, the Millennium Falcon, about 10 years ago. Look, everyone calm down, Sana said, both hands raised. Han had taken out his blaster and swirled around in his chair so its business end faced her directly. Behind him, the stars swooshed past in their long, shining streaks. Me? He blinked at her. I'm calm. This is me being calm, what you're seeing. Chewie, you calm? Chewie muttered something at a low growl and pulled out his bowcaster. See, Han said, Chewie's calm too. Now, why don't you tell us exactly what it is we're all dealing with? That part didn't sound so calm just now, Sana pointed out. Because it seems like a number of very powerful and unforgiving people with extremely destructive weapons are suddenly very interested in us being dead. About that. And I don't know about you, but Chewie and I, we like not being dead. We're very interested, you could say, in not being dead. Han leaned back, face bemused. And if we are going to be facing people who want us to be dead, we'd like to be very clear why it is we have to put our lives on the line. Chewie agreed with a roar. See, for example, Han continued, a whole lot of money. About that. For another example, a whole lot of money. Am I making myself clear? Sana rolled her eyes and pulled out a data pad. Crystal, she grumbled. That part was already a given, Solo. She tapped a couple of keys and the device bleeped excitedly. Boom, you've got half your cut and you're considerably richer than you were 5 seconds ago, which probably just means you're that much of a fraction less in insurmountable debt. Congrats. Hey now, are you done being the coy space cadet and ready to have an adult conversation, or do you feel like continuing to play cute? Look, sister, Han waved an unimpressed hand in the air. I can't help it if I'm Sana turned to go, shaking her head. All right, let me know. Hold up, Han said. Let me see that data pad. Anyone can push a bunch of buttons and make a machine go bleep. And then we talk about what that thing you stole is. Sana held up the pad face out, and Han's eyebrows went to the top of his forehead. That was a lot of zeros. Chewie barked his approval. All right, Han said. Let's talk. Lando hadn't taken good care of the Falcon's main sitting area. Which was to say, he had taken too good care of it. The guy was meticulous. When Han had won it fair and square-ish in that fateful Sabacc game a while back, he'd found the entire ship spotless, souped up, sparkling. Who could live in those conditions? Unacceptable. Han had immediately gotten to work scuffing it up, making it a place where a regular person could kick back and enjoy themselves, not some maniac's immaculate cape museum. And it remained a damn mess, to Han's deep contentment. It took work to keep things that messy, especially with Chewie constantly picking up after himself. Sana shoved a rotary engine fan off the bench with a scowl and sat. Chewie stretched out on the reclining spin chair they'd picked up on a spice run in Pantora. Han preferred to stand. He had a feeling this conversation would require pacing. Plenty of pacing. I don't know exactly what it is, Sana admitted. Well, that's a great start. She shot him a look. Are you going to let me talk, or are you going to interrupt me with annoying quips every other sentence? I'll try to keep it to every 3 sentences, in the interest of time. How thoughtful. Anyway, it's called the Phalanx Redux Transmitter, and best I can tell... Chewie roared, and Han raised a hand, shaking his head. Wait, hold up. The what now? Sana said it again, very slowly this time. Do you want me to write it down for you, or would that make it more confusing? Just keep going. It doesn't matter what it's called. Oh, it might. Best I can tell, it's got something to do with droids. It accesses their programming somehow, but I don't know how or what it does exactly when it accesses them. Just that it's a powerful enough form of technology that a number of extremely, shall we say, connected bidders showed up when it went up for auction a few weeks ago. Han frowned. Oh, I didn't hear about this. Behold my shocked face. My employer sent me to put a bid in. Place was a madhouse. All the major syndicates had people there, and there were more than a few shady, unmarked types that probably repped various corporations or the banking houses. Obviously, things were gonna get messy, and indeed they did. In the final round of bidding, a Crimson Dawn agent outbid the closest contenders, an unaffiliated tall smuggler, and some tall hooded fellas, I presume, had something to do with the Commerce Guild. Who was running it? The Wandering Star, or more specifically, some creepy-looking Pawan. Is there any other kind? Han? Those long, skinny faces and sunken eyes, though? Han shuddered. And why do they all have messed-up teeth? Utapau has some of the best doctors in the galaxy. They don't have dentists? You need help, Han. Seriously. Anyway, someone opened fire and all hell broke loose. Is it really a party if that doesn't happen? A wicked good time. Barely got out of there alive. No one knows where the Phalanx is now, though. Wait, it disappeared after all that? Sana shrugged. And from what I hear, the Wandering Stars have been in turmoil ever since. Two of their big leaders were capped during the chaos at the auction. I can tell you that every syndicate in the galaxy has a guy on this. Or girl. She flashed a winning smile. And which syndicate has you on it? Sana just kept smiling. All right, go on then. Thank you, I will. We came up with a plan to flush out some of the fellow contestants and find out what they know. Basically, a bluff run. Put the word out that I had the Phalanx and was willing to sell and see whose head popped up. And then shoot it? Basically. Or at least some part of the body attached to it. Thing is, you weren't expecting the head to be Trandoshan and the body the Empire's. Things got a little out of control, quick. And let's just say they didn't show up to buy. Han had been pacing without realizing it. He spun around, the various pieces of the situation rearranging themselves in his mind, and walked straight into a cable shifter that was dangling from an open part of the ceiling. Ah! Chewie! Han growled. Chewie shot back a snarled reply full of logic and well-thought-out rebuttals that Han swatted away with a gruff wave of his hand. Anyway, where does all that leave us? If the Empire... It leaves us still needing to get our hands on the Phalanx before anyone else does, and also not get hemmed in by the Empire in the process. What could possibly go wrong? Do we have any data on where it might be, or are we just supposed to wander out into the galaxy and hope it shows up? Funny you should ask, Sana said with a mischievous grin. In a small sort of way, our plan to flush out the competition did actually work. Han and Chewie looked at each other. Oh, follow me.
The Vermilion, now. A narrow corridor ran off to the side of the cargo hold. It ended in a closet-sized room with a bench and short table equipped with a holo projector. Han had been standing outside it for 10 minutes, trying to figure out what he was going to say to his wife and child. The sounds of a raucous Psygok game drifted in from the main hold, and by the timbre of Chewie's growls and Kasha's laughter, it sounded like things weren't going well for Team Wookiee. He would just call and they would chat. No big deal. Leia already knew the basics of what Han was up to, and she herself had said not to key her into the parts she didn't need to know. Deniability. The eternal cover-your-butt game of politics and bureaucracy. Han understood it. Not nearly as well as Leia did, of course, but he knew she couldn't be caught knowing they were about to go off the radar and undercover. Still, something felt off. Something Han couldn't put his finger on. He didn't like describing things, and he especially didn't like it when those things were feelings. A blaster was the best negotiating tool he knew. The only one, really. And if he was being honest, that was probably the problem right there. He couldn't fight his way out of this, whatever this was, and that's all he really knew how to do.
Ugh, he grunted, hitting the door panel. The door slid open, and Han stepped back.
The room was dark, except for two glimmering blue images. A man and a woman, both dressed in ceremonial robes and smiling at the person sitting in the darkness between them. Taka turned toward the door, and the hallway lights threw a stark shine across their startled, tear-stained face.
I...
Han said, raising a hand to his lips and creasing his brow.
I'm sorry, I can...
Taka clicked off the image, stood... walked out of the room without looking at Han.
Not your fault,
they muttered. And then Han was alone.
Well, Han said out loud, that was...
He hit the call button and crossed his arms over his chest.
What's wrong?
Leia asked as her translucent blue image shimmered into existence in front of Han. He shook his head.
That's just it. I don't know.
Even reduced to a luminous, barely there hollow, she looked radiant. It was still early on Chandrilla, and she'd clearly just woken up. Her brown hair hung in long, unbrushed cascades past her bare shoulders, and her eyes were sleepy. She adjusted herself, sitting up, and Han recognized the careful movements he would use when trying not to wake the boy, then saw his son's tiny hand wrapped around Leia's waist.
How is he?
She smiled, looking like some kind of ethereal angel, and hoisted Ben carefully into a more comfortable position.
He's all right. He was asking for you today, and then again before bed.
Han had known that would happen. He'd tried to tell Ben he'd be gone, and what that meant. Ben had nodded, but who knew what a 2-year-old could really grasp? Still, even knowing it would come, the idea of Ben wanting to spend time with him, it felt like a chasm was opening up inside Han, and he couldn't name it or slow its spread.
You look so sad,
Leia said.
Talk to me, Han.
Everything's all right,
he said with a sigh, not even trying to pretend that was true. Leia knew he was no good at talking about stuff, but she always tried to get him to do it anyway. She'd ask a straightforward question, and then settle back with the most serene possible expression on her face, and wait for him to shake loose some semblance of an answer. That's exactly what she was doing now, in fact, without even so much as a question asked. Her tired eyes and pursed lips awaited his reply, but Han knew that face didn't mean judgment. It was the opposite. She'd let him ramble on, muddling out whatever mess he'd gotten himself into until it made some kind of sense. That was how well she knew him. Well enough to help him get out of his own way. Get out of his way herself, and still somehow be there for him when things made sense again. He looked up.
I think I miss you.
The hologram of Leia laughed.
Well, that's a relief. Don't sound so surprised about it, though.
Han cringed.
I didn't mean...
Relax, Lunk. I know what you meant.
Dada?
Ben's little head appeared in the hollow, blinking. Then a smile broke out on his face.
Dada!
Hey, little buddy,
Han said. The boy reached out and then frowned. He was still figuring out this hollow thing. Had probably just watched his own little hand swat through his father's glowing image.
Come sleep some more, Ben,
Leia cooed, pulling him close before he could get too caught up in the phantom dad problem.
Always taming the wild beasts, Han smirked.
Plenty of practice,
Leia shot back.
I don't deny it.
Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone else on board.
Taka's voice blasted suddenly over the comm.
Oh, no.
Han groaned.
We are preparing to leave hyperspace in approximately 5 minutes.
What's wrong?
Leia asked.
This kid we've got piloting. They're a piece of work.
Please secure any leftover trash you have lying around, including your loved ones.
Leia scoffed.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, a real joker. Although, just a few minutes ago.
In approximately 10 minutes, we'll be docking at...
Han hit the mute button on the hollow. Leia didn't need to know where they'd be docking.
Substation Grimdock, home of the infamous prison complex and its galaxy-renowned cuisine. Not that I would know. Anyway, strap in! Taka, out!
What was that all about?
Leia asked.
Nothing, Han said, rubbing his eyes. Must have hit a bad transmission area of some kind.
Oh, Landa, guys?
Taka's voice blurted back out.
You might want to come and take a look at this.
For a smuggler, Leia said, you're really a terrible liar.
Former smuggler, Han pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Looking mighty smuggler-like from here.
Han stood, shrugging his approval.
Give him hell in the Senate today, Your Highness.
Hey, Han, be safe, okay?
What you got?
Lando said, settling into the bench behind Taka and gazing out through the cockpit window.
Whoa.
It looked like they'd rolled up in the middle of an epic space battle that had just been put on a momentary pause. A few dozen frigates, gunships, and corvettes hung in the air above the iron surface of Substation Grimdock. All of them were locked and loaded, according to the wildly beeping notifications on the sensor screen.
Something we should know, Lando said.
A few were easily recognizable as New Republic freighters. Most of the others had the thrown-together bootlegged look of pirate ships. And then a couple were just sleek and unmarked. Probably syndicate ships, Lando thought.
I heard there was some trouble over here,
Taka said, clicking some buttons and pulling down on the throttle.
But I didn't think it would be all this. Looks like we're all about to get blown to pieces.
Indeed, Lando said. Is that a Hutt frigate?
Yep, and that one's probably Black Sun.
What's the plan?
Taka shrugged.
Doc, go about our business, try to appear as little and harmless as we possibly can, and pray we don't get lit up just because.
Aren't we pretty little and harmless, considering the company we just jumped into?
Taka's reply was a rambunctious grin.
I like how you roll,
Lando said, as Han walked in, cursed, and sat down heavily on the bench.
Exactly, Taka said.
Do we know?
We know nothing, Lando said. We're just bringing it in nice and easy and keeping it moving.
Good plan, Han said. Are those NR ships? Leia did say they were deploying some of the fleet, but I didn't think it would be here.
And anyway, what fleet? Lando complained. Mothma's been on a decommissioning rampage since Jakku. All the heavy weapons are out of service from what I've heard. I don't know how this new world is supposed to work without weapons to keep us safe.
Han scowled.
You don't have to tell me, Lando. Remember, I'm married to a politician. What do you think I go to sleep every night hearing horror stories about?
Kind of sweet, actually, Taka said. If you take out the imminent threat of total destruction and all that.
You try it, Han said.
Marrying a politician?
Taka scoffed.
Hard pass.
All right. Bring it down, Lando said.
Taka said as the sensor computer bleeped an urgent warning.
One of those frigates looks interested in us.
It was a Mon Cal ship, clearly revamped and thoroughly trashed to the point of being pirate acceptable.
What do these clowns want?
Lando said.
They're hailing us, Taka said. Want me to answer?
Yeah. Go with the whole New Republic maintenance crew cover story, and we'll take it from there.
What if they asked aboard?
Han leaned forward, blaster in hand.
Then we improvise, he said with a grin. Well, let's hope it doesn't get to that, Lando said. There's a whole lot of firepower hanging out on this Vector, and I'd rather not get tangled up.
Taka grunted something that Lando didn't catch, and then put the transmission through. The long, sallow face and beaked snout of a Kosian glared out at them, his big, shining eyes inscrutable. A leather pilot's cap sat on his head, and several coils of some serpentine creature were wrapped around his neck like a scarf.
This is Captain Viz Moshara of the Radium Destro Bar,
the Kosian said in tightly accented Basic.
Identify yourselves or be boarded and destroyed.
Greetings, Captain Moshara,
Taka said.
We are a New Republic maintenance vessel en route to substation Grimdock to perform some routine repairs.
Ah-ha!
The Kosian's lengthy face creased into a pain-stricken grimace. Lando held his breath. Captain Moshara was apparently laughing.
Is there a problem?
Taka asked.
You picked a very, very interesting moment to do some repairs. Are you not aware of Meganon's amnesty?
Oh, right, Taka said. Meganon's amnesty, of course.
How is it that you are a New Republic vessel doing New Republic work on a New Republic substation and you haven't been briefed on the current crisis facing the New Republic at that exact station?
We...
Prepare to be boarded,
Captain Moshara said, signaling someone off to his left.
This conversation will be more productive if we know what cargo you carry.
That's a negative, Captain, Taka said. We're under explicit instructions to proceed directly to the surface, and...
But Captain Moshara's image flickered and then vanished. The Vermilion shook as the larger vessel pulled alongside it and locked on to its airlock port.
Dang, Taka grunted. Nobody has any manners anymore.
Han stood and headed down the corridor.
Time to arm up. Chewie, get ready!
Taka, Lando said. Get these guys off us, now!
Taka nodded, pushed a series of buttons.
It's gonna draw some more attention, though.
Just take us free, Lando said.
Captain Moshara's face appeared once again over the dashboard. He looked as shaken as a Kosian could.
You have fully armed all your proton torpedoes, Vermilion. Why is such a small New Republic freighter even carrying such a heavy load of artillery?
That's none of your business, Taka said. What is your business is that I will let loose the full barrage if you attempt to board this vessel.
You will be destroyed along with us.
Moshara gasped.
You would never!
Taka ran their fingers along an array of buttons, and both ships rocked as explosions lit up along the starboard side of the radium destrobar.
You're a lunatic!
Moshara yelled.
What's going on out there?
Han called from down the corridor.
Everything's under control,
Lando hollered back. Moshara was still shaking his fists and glancing around wildly.
This is madness! Detach and pull away! Call back the boarding party!
Taka grinned and pressed one more button, sending a laser blast straight across the Destrobar's nose.
Pull away!
Moshara yelled.
Let these maniacs pass!
Well played,
Lando said as the hollow blipped out of existence and the Destrobar glided away. Taka acknowledged the comment with a grim shrug and then nodded to the sensor, where one of the New Republic starships was banking toward them.
These guys won't be so easy to shake. They probably picked up our little show of force and are wondering why we're more heavily armed than they are.
Bring it in fast, then, Lando said. I'm guessing they have bigger things to worry about, considering this standoff looks about to blow.
Substation Grimdock. Now. Substation Grimdock had been a moon once, albeit a very small one. Then the Empire got a hold of it and covered the entire surface with a never-ending labyrinth of cage-lined corridors, torture chambers, and mess halls. A moon-sized prison. When that prison filled up with various gangsters, dissidents, and rebels from around the galaxy, the Imperials started digging excavating cells from the very canals and inner chambers of the moon itself. That was where they stored the most heinous criminals, supposedly. And there were rumors they'd only stopped digging because the workers upset a nest of Bastaks and got massacred. But no one really knew what Bastaks were. That was just what the one droid that got away kept repeating over and over. So every once in a while, when a high-security prisoner would vanish from the bowels of the prison, well, it was presumed the Bastaks had eaten well that night, whatever they were.
"Looks charming,"
Han said, gazing out from the cockpit at the sprawling chain-and-cage metropolis stretching beneath them. He'd pulled on the borrowed pair of New Republic officers' pants he'd found in the storeroom and was trying to close the hook and bar on the waistband.
"It's not," Taka said.
It was the first time Han had heard them sound serious about anything.
"And no, I'm not going out there with you. It's just techie stuff anyway. Do what you have to do and let's get out of here. This place gives me the heebie-jeebies."
"Finally, we agree on something," Han said. "Whose pants are these? A 10-year-old's?"
Mine, Taka said. "I keep a bunch of disguises around just in case."
"Yeah, well, you're tiny. And I hate uniforms. Hell, half the reason I quit being a general was so I wouldn't have to squeeze myself into these ridiculous starched monkey pajamas."
"And here you are," Lando said with a chuckle. "Doing just that."
"All right, Captain Fancy Pants."
Han finally latched the hook and zipped up the fly, then realized he hadn't tucked in the dress shirt and undid the whole thing with a grunt.
"Just because your whole world is a sultry cape strut along the galactic catwalk of life doesn't mean the rest of us have to live in discomfort."
Taka spat blue milk back into the tin cup they were sipping it from. "Damn!"
Han fastened up the shirt, nearly choking himself to death with that final collar button, and then smoothed it down under the pants. Finally, he latched the pants back together and slid a belt over the whole thing, keeping it all more or less in place.
"I hate uniforms," he said with finality.
"Seems like uniforms hate you too," Lando said.
"Chewie, you ready?"
"Mmm,"
Chewie affirmed.
"Vessel 75RX9.
An annoyed voice droned over their comm.
"Identify yourself, all right? Thanks."
Lando leaned forward, squinting at the patrol tower.
"And here's where having a prison transport-type ship will pay off."
"Greetings, substation Grimdock,"
Taka said in a voice that sounded downright imperial.
"We've been sent from the Department of Prisons on Chandrilla to investigate some possible technical malfunctions with your computer system. Please clear us for landing immediately."
Han held his breath, but the reply came almost instantly.
Yeah, whatever you say. Docking Bay 3.
Lando and Han looked at each other over Taka's head.
"That was eerily simple," Han said.
Taka shrugged, looking puzzled.
"I got nothing. If it's a trap, we're all gonna die, but that was true anyway. So..."
"Bring her in," Lando said. "Han, anything goes wrong in there, you hit us up immediately. We'll come get you."
"I mean, it's just the archival station, right?"
Taka said.
"And anyway, this place has been under New Republic jurisdiction since Endor. We're with the good guys now. Everything should be fine."
No one even bothered trying to look convinced. A uniformed Gungan awaited them behind a desk at the main entrance to Administrative Sector 44B of Substation Grimdock. The nameplate on the desk said Aro Inkukala. He was reading a thick datapad and appeared completely uninterested in the world around him.
"Oh, these guys,"
Han said under his breath to Chewie and Peekpa.
I'll handle this.
He stepped up to the desk and waved, flashing a goofy smile.
Greetings. Me, sir?
Aro held up a hand.
Let me just stop you right there, buddy. What's happening?